Oh, we've been looking forward to this one all day long. Nat Geo debuted a new program last night, a six-parter called Inside the American Mob. And one of the gentlemen who is featured quite prominently on the show is in studio with us right now. He is Michael Francis, former associate for the Columbo crime family. How are you, Michael?
How are you? Good to be here.
How are you doing so far?
We're doing great. So far, you're okay.
You've never seen more people buzzing around a guest. We have a lot of big guests on this show. You've never seen the staff at attention. Hey, can we get you some water? Hey, do you need some coffee? Hey, do you need a pillow to sit on? I mean, we're going out of our way here, buddy.
Well, you're doing great so far.
Describe.
I'm impressed.
Describe for the listeners your position in the family. In which, like, there's five families in New York, and we're going back to 1970?
70s and 80s.
Okay. Yeah. Five families.
I was a capo regime in the Columbo crime family. And that's, you know, you start out as a soldier. I was inducted in 1975, Halloween night. And for 5 years, I was a soldier. And then in 1980, I got appointed to capo regime, or captain, as it's known.
And how many of those are there in a typical family?
In our family, we had about 115 made members. There were 15 capos at that time.
Really? So, yeah. Wow, okay.
You were born into this lifestyle, and you had a choice whether to be involved in it or not?
Yeah, pretty much. My dad was the underboss of the Colombo family back in the 60s, and so I was born into the life, you know. But my dad originally didn't want this for me. He wanted me to get an education, go to school, be a doctor. And he was pretty adamant about that, and that's the road I was on until he got in trouble and things changed.
He was in jail, and he had a conversation with you that was pretty much – do you want to do this?
Yeah. I mean, he got indicted in a big federal case, convicted, sentenced to 50 years, and it was devastating for me as I was very close with Dad. He was 50 when he went in. I figured that's a death sentence.
Sure.
And So we had a conversation in Leavenworth Penitentiary because I had gotten very close with Joe Colombo, who was our boss. And, you know, I started to meet a lot of Dad's friends. And why are you going to school? You got to help your old man out. So we had a conversation in prison. And he was a little bit upset at first because he wanted that for me. Plus, he didn't want to hear it from my mother.
He was upset that you said you wanted to be in the life.
Yeah, I said, right? I didn't say I wanted to be in the life. I said, Dad, I lost interest in school. If I don't help you out, you're going to die in prison. And I didn't know what exactly I was going to do, but his words were, well, if you're going to be on the street, I want you on the street the right way. And in his mind, the right way was to become a member of his life.
Right.
What was Dad convicted for?
He was convicted for masterminding a nationwide string of bank robberies. And I got to tell you this, you know, my dad did a lot of bad things in his life. My dad is 96 years old. He's the oldest living made man in America. He's the oldest living federal inmate, and he's been in this life over 66 years. So he's a legend, and did a lot of bad things. So did I. I pled guilty to a crime I was guilty of. But that particular case that my dad's done all this time on, he was 100% innocent, and I'll take that to my grave. My dad was no bank robber. Absolutely.
How did they convict him of it? They just
painted
him as the bad guy?
Yeah, I mean, it was, during that time, too. I mean, everybody was rah-rah government, and hey, if you got indicted, you were probably guilty, they thought. A little different today,
fortunately.
Sure,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, he got convicted, and that was it.
I think he was innocent of the charges, too, then. I just
want to
go right on record.
Confirm that. There's no question about it in my mind.
Thank you. We're going to take
a polygraph?
Yes.
No. If we can be on a jury for the retrial, you can count on us. Didn't you say on the show that I saw last night on the Nat Geo channel that your dad killed lots of people?
Well, you know, I mean, look, he was known to be an enforcer, and his reputation was that, I don't know, the government said he killed 30, 40, 60 people. The number keeps changing, but, look, my dad grew up in a time when, there was a lot of work being done to family. Now, you know, I mean, obviously he and I, we don't discuss those things because you just don't.
You never had that conversation?
No,
jail or?
You know what? My dad told me one thing, and I'll never forget it, and it actually saved me. He said, Mike, if you and I go out and do something and we commit a crime, 1 minute after we do it, if you say to me, remember what happened, I'll say, what are you talking about? In other words, you never discuss anything, and
right.
So, you know, that's the way we live.
But you were on the special last night. It was sort of weirdly funny in that you said 40, I don't think 60. I mean, really, but 40 is bad enough, don't you think?
Yeah, it's kind of like Wiener, if you know what's gone in New York. I don't
Anthony
think it was
Wiener.
12. Might have been less than 12. Yeah, somewhere around that, yeah.
All right. Michael Francis, let me ask you this. When you're working for your family and you've got a job to do and you spent a lot of years just carrying out whatever orders they were giving you, there was no opportunity to say no. You kind of swore you would do whatever they asked you to do. Does morality ever cross your mind when you're doing some of these things that you know will hurt people?
You know, understand this. When you come into the life, you make an agreement that you have a very strict policy to follow. If you violate those policies, rules, and regulations, you could pay with some serious consequences. So you know that you could be called upon to do that to one of your brothers if he makes a mistake. And in the same token, they can do that with you. So you figure the playing field is level. You know, it's we understand we're adults. We're over 21. And, you know, allegedly there's a lot of honor and respect in that life. So you look at it at that point in time, especially with the mentality I had, as a very honorable thing. You know,
why did you say allegedly?
Well, because when you get into the life, after a while, you find out it's not all what it's cracked up to be. I mean, a lot of things go on that are dishonorable. And, you know, I saw guys, you know, pay serious consequences when they shouldn't have. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that that goes on.
Once you agree, and we're going to take your calls, by the way, if you'd like to talk to Michael, 1-800-520-1067, if you have any questions for him. If they give you, once you agree, if they give you a job to do, you turn it down, you're dead.
Well, you can't turn it down. I mean,
that's just not an option.
No, it's not an option.
You can't go, why?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
You can't even question it.
Well, no, you can disagree with something. You can try to fight for somebody and say, well, you know, let's try to solve this another way. But once the boss makes a determination, that's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. You got to do it.
What's the status of the mob today?
You know, it's still there. Five families still exist. You know, the Colombo family, we had 115 when I left. I think the number's around 100 now. But it's been greatly diminished as far as the power is concerned because in the 70s, well, the 80s, I should say, Giuliani led the charge and really seriously put a dent, put a lot of the guys away. You know, all the bosses went away. So, I mean, they took away a lot of the power. But I always say this, you know, when I was in that life, they had 1,400 FBI agents in, assigned to the five families. We had about 800 guys total, made guys. We had a lot of associates, but made guys. 1,400 on 800 guys. Today, all these years later, they have about 120 agents on these guys. So they take that force away because now it's all about terrorism and ID theft, and they
right.
figure, hey, they depleted us to a degree. So what's going to happen? These guys are going to build up again. I mean, they're pretty resourceful.
How are you still alive?
Another good question.
Well, you know, we need to take a break. We'll start with how are you still alive when we come back.
Sounds good.
And we'll take your phone calls, 1-800-520-1067.
Our guest in studio this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show is Michael Francis. He is a former associate for the Colombo crime family. Inside the American Mob is a new documentary series on the Nat Geo channel. Just debuted last night. Kevin and I both watched it. It was awesome. Those episodes repeat throughout the week. It is a six-part series. Did you feel it was accurate, Michael? Were you happy with the job they did?
Yeah, I thought they did a great job. I was really impressed. And, you know, I've done a number of these things, and I would say that this was the most credible and most entertaining one that I've been involved in.
The thing that made it so good, I think, was that they talked to you and they talked to other people that were in the middle of it, and they talked to Giuliani and FBI agents and all different. Donnie Brasco was a big part of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were able to get to everybody, and I thought everybody did a good job.
Before the break, Kevin asked, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time as you travel around the country, how are you still alive? Like, it seems contrary to what our expectations that you would even be able to be on a radio station talking about the things that went down.
Well, it is, you know, and obviously, you know, the thought behind it is you leave that life, you either leave in a coffin or you join the government and enter a witness protection program. Obviously, I've done neither. But, you know, a couple of reasons. You know, one of the dangers of that life, or the horrible things about that life, you're in trouble. You don't know it. Your best friend walks you into a room. You don't walk out again.
Right.
Well, fortunately, I spent, you know, a lot of time in that life at a very high level. So I knew the mentality. I knew the modus operandi. I knew what these guys would do and wouldn't do. So I changed my whole lifestyle. Move out to the West Coast. You know, I didn't create patterns in my life. Didn't walk my dog same time every morning. Didn't go to the same restaurant once a week.
For how long?
For a number of years, because, you know, it was really hot for me at one point in time. The boss of my family, Persico, immediate hit on me when I walked away. My dad went along with it.
Your dad?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had a rough time. The feds kept telling me, you know, the words all over the street from our informants, you're a dead man, cooperate with us. I didn't want to do that.
You didn't do that either.
No, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, and I haven't been in a club in almost 30 years because that's a bad place for me. I know who hangs out in these places. You know, a guy makes a phone call to New York. I walk out in the parking lot. Boom. I'm gone. So
are you still concerned?
You know, I'm not concerned because everybody, Kevin, that I ran with is either dead or in prison for the rest of their lives.
Okay.
I outlasted everybody, you know, and I've been very fortunate in that regard. But, you know, I go into New York. I'm careful. I go to certain places where I know I need to watch, where it's a hot area, I'm a little bit more careful. So I don't ever sell these guys short, ever.
We're going to take your calls in just a moment here. If you'd like to ask a mobster at 1-800-520-1067. Michael, have you been following the Whitey Bulger trial?
I have to a degree, yes.
What'd you make of that witness who turned up mysteriously dead 8 miles from his car last week?
Yeah, well, you know what? With Whitey, anything could happen. But, you know, I got to tell you, the interesting about that, their defense is that he was never a government informant. Whitey Bulger 100% was a government informant. And the reason he fled and left is because he was given information on some of my associates in the New England family.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and they were going to kill him. And he knew about it, and the FBI tipped him off, and he took off. That's why he left. But 100% he was an informant for 20 years. And he was, what he was doing, he was clearing the streets of Boston of all the Italian guys so that he can take over. And he was giving information on them, and we found out about it.
Fascinating. All right, 1-800-520-1067. Your questions for our guest, Michael Francis, on The Kevin and Bean Show. Hit it, Steve.
Ask a mobster. If you want somebody whacked in your neighborhood, who are you going to ask?
Should we have previewed this?
I'm embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed right now.
Do you sleep with the fish? If you don't be good, who are you going to ask? Ask a mobster! Do you have to pay up or you wind up dead?
Keep going.
No, I think that's enough.
You know, I want to meet the guy that that's singing
yes,
that song.
Yes,
a little bit later,
we'll
please.
Point you to him.
Okay. Yes, we want you to meet him.
We are not fans of his.
All right.
Let's take Steve to get us going here. He is on line three. He has an outstanding question for you, Mr. Francis. Steve, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Ask a Mobster.
How's it going, everybody? Hey, Mike.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, what's going on? So, hey, any situation with the people that you run with and someone gets jammed up medically, you know, you're the captain. What's the call? I mean, do you take them somewhere or do you just kind of cut bait?
Meaning, like if someone gets shot, and that has to be reported.
Meaning, can you take them to the hospital, or?
Well, like, you know, you kind of want to keep a low profile, as I can imagine, you know, so.
Well, yeah, how do you handle that?
Yeah, we had doctors that we trusted at that time if something would have happened in that way, and, you know, we had to take care of it under the table, so to speak. But, yeah, I mean, you got to take care of your own. If somebody's doing work for you, you got to take care of them.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you for the call. Let's try Kevin. He's on line two. He's up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, guys, big fan.
Thank you.
I was wondering, has there been any movie or television show like The Sopranos that like nailed what it's like to be in the mob?
Yeah, two most accurate movies, Goodfellas and Donnie Brasco. And I knew all of those guys. They portrayed him very well. Pesci was terrific. And Goodfellas, they mentioned my name, by the way. But both of those were very, very accurate. Sopranos, let me tell you this. If a mob guy was ever visiting a psychiatrist, he'd be in the trunk of the car by the end of the week, along with the psychiatrist. So,
but, so not so realistic.
No, but I thought Gandolfini was terrific. You know, it's a shame what happened to him, but he played a great role. But the rest of the guys were okay, but the mob story part of it wasn't really accurate.
Now, Donnie Brasco, I didn't realize was such a big part of your story. I mean, he was pretty much trying to infiltrate the mob during the...
Yeah, well, fortunately, he started with the Columbos, with our crew, and I met him during that time.
You did?
Yeah, but I didn't do any business with him. Thank God I wouldn't be here. But he didn't make it in our family. And then he met Lefty, and that's when Lefty kind of brought him. Lefty was a good guy. He was kind of happy-go. He was pretty much like Pacino played him. And so, you know, you make money with Lefty. If he thought you could make money with you, you're in.
Right.
And so he pulled Donnie in, and fortunately, it was that crew and not ours.
What did you think when it was revealed that Donnie Brasco was an FBI undercover agent?
You know, it's a shock, but I tell you, we had in our own family, too, a guy by the name of Greg Scarpa, who was one of us. You know, we found out was an undercover guy or working with the feds for over 20 years. I mean,
wow.
That scared me even more because I was, you know, he was a captain along with me. But, you know, we heard these things. I mean, it was shocking with Donnie Brasco, but, you know, that's what happened. You know, we started to get loose in that way. They opened the books in the 70s, started bringing a lot of guys in, and they were bringing guys in for the wrong reasons. They thought a guy was an earner. They'd bring him in, and, you know, that's why we had a lot of trouble later on.
And the stories that were described in the Nat Geo special last night about Donnie Brasco, was that the first time that the FBI had tried that approach to go in undercover?
That I know of, yeah. I mean, that was the most significant. But I want to tell you this. One thing I'm going to disagree with the show on a little bit. Donnie Brasco said he had a $500,000 contract on him. Now, I want to let this make sense to you guys. When we come into that life as a soldier, okay, We're required to do something like that. Bosses don't pay to have somebody rubbed out. There's no money ever involved. But, I mean, it sounds good. You know, $500,000 contract. But you don't pay for that kind of stuff. In a Colombo family, we had 115 guys. 15 of us were earners. The other 100 were around doing the work. You know, that's what they were required to do. So whenever you hear that, you know, $500,000, 100,000, just dismiss it right off the hand. I know Donnie and I will have an issue over that, but it's okay.
You were born into this. Do you look back at it and wish you hadn't been? Do you regret?
You know, I mean, I regret some of the things that went on, of course. Now when you take a different look at it, but, you know, what could I do? I mean, people say to me, Michael, you know, are you doing what you do now to make up for what you did in the past? And you can't make up for what you did. What's done is done. But
is
you
that
just
hard
try
to deal with? Is that hard to
You mentally? Know, at times, yeah. You know, because times things come back to you. You know, something will happen. And, you know, when you get out of that life, you don't get a lobotomy. I mean, I remember everything that went on pretty clearly. So at times it's, you know, it's troublesome, but you got to do the best you can.
What are you going to do?
We've got time for one more segment of phone calls for our guest. Michael Francis is here, former associate for the Colombo crime family. The show is called Inside the American Mob on Nat Geo. If you've got any questions, this is the best time you'll ever have to ask a mobster. 1-800-520-1067. We'll be right back on K-Rock. Our guest in studio on the Kevin Bean Show is Mr. Michael Francis. He is a former associate for the Colombo crime family. The show is called Inside the American Mob on Nat Geo channel. He also has written a couple of books, including Blood Covenant and I'll Make You an Offer You Can't Refuse. Although we tried to make an offer to get him to take out Justin Bieber for us during the song there, and he won't do it. So
I'm just about ready now. My daughter drives me crazy with this kid.
Before we get back to the calls for Ask a Mobster here on the Kevin Bean Show, the special last night, I noticed that there was Fat Sal and there was Crazy Joe, but it didn't seem like you had a colorful mob nickname. What's
oh,
up,
he
Mike?
Has one. He just hates it.
Yeah, I hate it. I mean, I didn't have one on the street for some reason, at least not to my face, but, you know, the media tagged me as the Yuppie Don. Which, don't get insulted. That, you know, I look at California guys sometimes as yuppies. We didn't have yuppies back in New York, so I didn't like that.
That was kind of an insult to you?
Yeah, it still is. I thought I outgrew that.
Let's get to some calls now. 1-800-520-1067. Let's ask a mobster.
I'm not playing that again if you think.
If that was an intro, I'm not doing that again.
All right, let's try we got some really good ones here. Let's try Mary. Mary is on line 5, and she's up first for our guest, Michael Francis, here on the Kevin Mitchell. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding on.
Hi. My question is, do you have any remorse for the way your actions affected the families that...
Well, you know, Mary, I want you to be clear on this. You know, sometimes we get a reputation of being guys that were, you know, rampant, running around, shooting people and hurting people like that. It wasn't that way. I mean, I had a family, I had a wife and children, and what we did among ourselves. At least certainly that was my, my involvement in that life.
What does that mean? What does that mean you did?
When damage was done to people, it was done among ourselves. I mean, we're that kind of group. We didn't go outside and just rampant, you know, hurting people. Matter of fact, when I read about these drive-by shootings and about all of this stuff, it disgusts me.
Anything that's random, because in your life, there was always a reason?
It was very serious. Yeah. I mean, you didn't hurt people, and if somebody really had to pay a severe consequence. It was a lot of conversation. It went from the boss on down. I mean, we weren't cowboys like that.
Right.
And sometimes the media builds it up a different way.
But what about the families of the people who deserved it?
Well, it's...
Is that tough?
It is tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it is tough. And there's no way to justify it. Don't get me wrong. You know, we can't justify it. But again, we always looked at it as a level playing field, and we all knew what we were getting involved in.
Lister Yvette writes in... That she wanted to know if wives and children of mob families are off limits for attacks. Do you just strictly deal with the guys in it?
That's a great question, and 100% that's correct. We had a strict policy. You never involved the women and children. And if that was the case, obviously I would have done things differently. But I never worried about my wife and children. And to this day, I don't think that policy has ever been violated.
Wow.
And if something were to happen to you or somebody else in the mob, their wives and kids would be taken care of by the family, right?
Not really. You know, unfortunately, that's one of the honorable things that's not really honorable. I mean, you're pretty much on your own, you know, unless you had a business deal with somebody and they had to keep up their end. But, you know, it's not like it should be. You know, everybody doesn't get taken care of. And that's one of the problems in that life.
Let's talk to George. Hi, George.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just want to ask, were you ever offered a higher ranking in the family, and how that whole process of being promoted works?
Well, you know, when I got appointed a capo regime, the boss of my family, Carmine Persico, he's now doing life, but he just came to me and said, Mike, I'm making you a capo regime, a captain. That's the process.
And that's just under the underboss?
Yeah, I mean, you, captain, you can go right to be the boss.
Right to the boss.
Yeah, you don't have to go up and be the boss, and I mean, underboss and then a boss.
Tell us about the ceremony where they cut your hand. That seems like that has been shown in movies.
Yeah, very serious ceremony. It was a dimly lit room late at night. They want you to know that this is very serious. It's a very imposing situation. You walk in front of the boss. The captains are allowed to be there. And you stand in front of the boss, and he'll take a knife, cut your finger. Blood drops on the floor. This is a blood oath. With me, he put I cupped my hands. He put a picture of a saint, Catholic altar card, in my hands, lit it aflame. It doesn't hurt. It burned quickly. It was just symbolic.
Right.
And he said, tonight, Michael Francis, you are born again into a new life, into La Cosa Nostra. And they tell you, violate what you know about this life, betray your brothers, and you will die and burn in hell like the saint is burning in your hands. Do you accept? Yes, I do.
You thought, and 5 minutes before that, you thought you might be killed.
No,
right?
not before
10
that.
10 minutes? I mean, it seemed like when you were walking in, you were like, they were behind me, I was
well,
scared.
No, that was a different time.
Oh, that was a different
time. Yeah,
one.
That
okay.
was a different time. That's okay. when I got that. You know when in Donnie Brasco and Pacino says, I've been sent for?
Right.
Well, I got one of those.
Oh, okay. That's
and,
what you thought. Right
yeah, that's a different time. No, when you're going in, it's a big celebration afterwards, you know. You're happy. But
you know, the way you describe it, because you're such a good storyteller, it sounds exciting and fun and like something people would want to get into. But I don't think you're recommending this life, right?
No, I mean, look, when I got into the life...
You make it sound so glamorous.
Well, it's not. You know, the thing is, and that's you know, I speak to a lot of young kids, a lot of gangbangers. I really try to steer them away from the life. You know, they'll look at me, obviously I have credibility, and they'll go, Mike, you know that movie Goodfellas, you guys had it going on, you had the money, you had the power, you had the women. And I say, yeah, but didn't you see the end of the movie? Who got killed, who went right. to jail, who lost their family? They don't see that part. You know, and when I came into the life, I had a very idealistic view of the life. I was part of something my dad was part of. And the most alluring thing for me, guys, and I'm going to be honest with you, I miss it, was this brotherhood, this bond I had with the guys, this camaraderie among the men. I don't think there's anything more powerful than this bond among men. And, you know, I miss that at times because a lot of us got along and, you know, we had each other's backs, at least for a time. And that's the one thing about the life that I miss. Honestly.
Jasmine wants to know if you ever talk to or think about modern day gangs. Do you talk to any of those guys?
I do all the time. Yeah. I work with sheriff's departments. I go into detention centers. I spend a lot of time in high schools and things like that. And I really try to impact these kids. I've been doing it for the last 15 years, and I think I've had a lot of success.
Do you ever think about if you'd gone the other way and said no to joining the family business, was there something that you think you could have done that you would have enjoyed as much and that would have helped you provide for your family as well as that job did?
Well, you know, I got ahead for business, so, you know, I probably could have did okay and at least, you know, provided an income. Not like I made in the gas business, but it would have worked out. You know, do I look back and have regrets? Again, I tend not to look back. You know, you got to go forward in life. I think I would have been okay. Let's put it that way. Wouldn't have been as exciting, I would imagine, but
right.
I also wouldn't have had all that time in prison.
You'll regret this interview, though, right? That's for sure.
You guys might have. No, it's fun. You guys are great.
The show is terrific, you guys. I mean, as we mentioned, it really does have the actual participants, the real-life Donnie Brasco, the real-life Mayor Giuliani. You'll see Michael Francis in the documentary. It's called Inside the American Mob. It's running currently on Nat Geo. Repeats of last night's episodes throughout the week. It is a 6-part series. You absolutely want to check it out. And again, Mr. Francis' books include Blood Covenant, and I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. So glad we had a chance to have you come by. We really enjoyed it. Thank you, sir.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. We'll do it again.
I was giving some thought to Mug's problem last night, Kevin. I think I've got it.
Yeah.
The answer, the way he gets out of this $1,000 hole that he's in with his betting on football,
right,
is he starts betting on basketball.
Oh, good.
Because there's so many more games.
That's true.
They're playing every night of the week in basketball. Mugs, you could make that $1,000 back in a few nights if you really hit it.
You know, it's funny. I've actually done pretty well in basketball.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Oh, my God.
Now, Mugs was in the hole $800 before this past weekend and tried a 3-game parlay, which means all three have to come in or he loses.
That's easy, right? In
yeah,
football?
Yeah, always. And so that was going to get him out of the hole.
Uh-huh.
And then that didn't happen because Chicago won the Monday Night Football game. So now Muggs is $1,000 in the hole. Now, I don't know how much you know about Muggs, but probably you don't know much about his finances. He can pay $1,000 as much as I could pay $3 billion. He's got like 10 bucks in his checking account.
Muggs, that's how he got into the habit of eating all the food off everyone else's plates,
right,
because he was poor. I think Muggs is working he's got one of those jobs where he works for less than minimum wage, but we do tip him. So I think that's the only thing that he's getting by on.
And food.
Yes. But the bad news about betting is that you actually do owe the money, Beer Mug. And I know that you like to say, oh, they'll let me slide. Oh, they're nice guys. I've got plenty of time to make it back. It's fine. I have bad news for you. That is that we just got a phone call in the office that we asked Dave to transfer. And I believe your bookie is on the phone. I think Vinny Knuckles joins us now on the Tampa Beach on K-Rock.
Hello.
Mr. Knuckles?
Yeah, I'm looking for Beer Mug, please.
Yeah, he's here.
Right here.
Hey, Vinny.
Hey, Beer Mug. Where you been?
I'm getting the money together, you know?
You're getting the money together?
Yeah. It's going to take maybe a little over
a
week.
You know, when the game's over, that's usually when I need to be paid.
Is that how it's gone in the past, Muggs?
What was the game you bet on? What night was that?
That was Sunday and Monday night.
Sunday and Monday.
Yeah.
And today is, hold on, let me check the calendar for a second.
Yeah.
Today is Wednesday!
That's true. It is Wednesday.
I've been looking for you.
Oh, no.
You know how many Del Tacos there are between your house and where you work? 108, my friend. I looked at every single one of those. You're no place to be found. I leave you messages. I get nothing back. You know what this is?
That's
time ticking away,
Beer
Mug.
No. Have you gotten messages, Muggs? You just ignored them?
I think Vinny called me like twice.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Let me tell you something.
How much does he have? Can he cut some kind of a deal where he sort of makes it up through time, like he pays 50 bucks a week for a long time or something?
What am I, Kmart? What is this, layaway?
I don't know.
First of all, who the hell are you? Who are you? I'm talking to Beer Mug. Who are you?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to butt in there.
Which one are you? Are you Ellen Kay?
I'm Ryan.
Ryan.
Yeah.
I love that roses bit you do, by the way. Really funny.
Yeah, that's completely fake.
What?
It is.
You can't trust nobody.
That's
no
right.
More.
That's true.
I let this fat slob go stick me for $1,000, and now I find out your roses bits are fake.
Now, I have to ask, just because you are called Vinny Knuckles, how do you extract the money out of the people that bet with you, Vinny, if they don't pay back? I assume it's with flesh, right?
There's a sliding scale.
Okay.
Okay.
For anything under a $500 tab, for $100, I take a digit.
Oh.
What?
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, a thumb, a forefinger. You know, I leave the index finger usually so people can still use the phone.
That's nice.
So they can call me to tell me when I'm getting my money.
All right. So that's
anything
for
over $500. Like this mook,
yeah.
He pays me, he needs me $1,000. It goes in $500 chunks. Usually $500 per knee.
Per knee.
Per knee. Okay.
So let's see. The tune of $1,000 divided by 500. I take both your knees.
Now, what if he's able only to come up with 500, but he does pay you 500? Will that let you give him a little more time to get the next 500?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay,
as long
good.
As he pays. No!
Okay.
He doesn't owe me $500. He owes me $1,000.
Right, but I don't think. Do you have that, Muggs? Do you have $1,000?
Tick-tock.
Vinny, will you take...
It's also the sound of a baseball bat I got with a six-penny nail sticking out of it. I'm tapping it on my desktop.
Oh,
this is not
no.
good. This is not good.
How long, Muggs?
I'm going to take this baseball bat, and I'm going to hit you in the ass with it. Well, no, you wouldn't feel that. But I'm going to find some place in your body that isn't covered with just mounds of lard, and I'm going to smack you so hard. And by the way, tell your mother she still owes me for the Dodgers.
Oh, what? I thought she paid that.
Well, she didn't pay with money, if you know what I'm saying. Hey,
hey, K-Rock, what's it called? Wait, where are we?
I don't know.
K-Rock Road Trip USA 2013 Outside Lands Festival in San Francisco with Red Hot Chili Peppers, Phoenix, Nine Inch Nails, Vampire Weekend, and more. Your chance to qualify. Get on the standby boarding list in less than 45 minutes from right now on the Kevin Devine Show and each morning this week at 9:10. So I was on vacation a couple weeks ago, and apparently you had one of my faves, Jeff Garlin, on.
Yeah, he's the best.
I love him so much. I actually enjoy him on Curb Your Enthusiasm more than I do Larry David. He is the funniest character to me and a tremendous comedian as well. And he was in the news a couple weeks ago. Maybe you guys heard about this story where he was accused of and is now being sued by the woman whose car window he smashed after a parking lot dispute.
Yeah, it was at a Studio City CVS pharmacy.
Yeah.
And
is that the one you go to, Lisa?
There's two of them, and parking in both of them is terrible.
And, yeah. As are the drivers old.
Yes.
In both of them.
Yes.
It drives. I'm surprised that I haven't gotten in a knockdown, drag-out fight with some old dude.
Yeah, you do hate old people in parking lots, that's for
well,
sure.
Well, they're moving at like one-tenth the speed of the rest of the world.
They also like to stop for someone who has just gotten into their car and will be backing out in about 5 minutes.
Right, and wait.
And wait. And they just wait.
There's four or five cars behind them. They don't care. They're in no rush.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, look.
They're just waiting to die. That's where people go to wait to die, is the parking lot of a CVS.
Parking lots are just designed to be a recipe for tension, let's face it, because there, in many cases, especially in a crowded area like Studio City, there are going to be more cars than there are spaces. So it's always going to be a challenge to find a space. But what do you do when you arrive at a parking space that you think is yours the same time someone else arrives at a parking spot that they think is theirs? Like this article about this this arrest says gridlock ensued. What do you do if it's you versus the other driver?
Get in there first.
I have many times given up and just gone home.
Gone home?
Like, F it. I'm done with this.
Wait a minute. Wait.
I'm just not doing this anymore.
You don't even just park further away? You just go home?
No, there's no place. Like the Trader Joe's by me, I'll get in there and it's a nightmare. And I finally just go, screw it. I'll figure out something else.
Well, the woman won the space, and according to Garland, she then made a face at him. Mm. She says he got out of the car, followed her from behind, slammed his fist against the driver's side window so hard that it broke the glass. So that's when the police were called, and it just went on and on. And I guess she's suing him now. We'll find out what happens. Look, I don't have any idea what the specifics were. You know, he said, she said, I don't know what happened. But I do know that thousands of times every day around this great country of ours, this exact scenario is playing out where two people are going after the same space, or somebody's waiting and somebody else thinks they should just keep driving or whatever. It's kind of a miracle we don't hear more parking lot knifings, isn't it?
I certainly would think so, yeah. I mean, it really, it's funny how it can go from 0% to 100% aggravation in about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, and we want to take your calls, by the way, if you've been involved in a parking lot dispute. We want to hear if it's ever turned into a fight, or if it's ever turned into ramming cars, or if you guys have ever, like, what happened? How did it escalate in a parking lot? That's the story we want to hear from you at 1-800-520-1067. I don't know, again, I don't know exactly what happened in this case, but I can certainly see how something like this could happen. That's for sure. Especially if she won the space and then mocked. At that point, isn't it time to be a grateful winner?
You know,
be a graceful winner? Isn't that where you go, I'm going to play this classy. I already got my space.
I got the space. I'm not going to rub it in. I'm not even going to make eye contact.
Yeah, usually you put your head down and just walk as fast as you can.
I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
What?
You lie. But she, according to this report, said she made a face. Supposedly he hit the window. He's denying it. We don't have any idea what happened in this particular case, but we do know what happens in parking lots pretty much every day.
Well, and I'm identify with Bean. With that.
I'm with Bean. I don't understand how there aren't full-on battles every single day over parking spaces. And sometimes it's really funny because when you go to the mall, there are hundreds of parking spaces that are out further out.
If you're willing to walk.
Right. But you are fighting over one that's literally sometimes 20, 25 feet closer.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just craziness.
But I mean, what it boils down to is that for most people in most situations, they only care about what their life is, what they've got going on, what they want, right?
Right.
Most people aren't looking at the big picture.
I care more about what Jeff Garland wants than what that woman wanted.
All right, let's take Rob real quick before the break, and then we'll come back with your calls at 1-800-520-1067. You got Garland in a parking space. What happened? Rob, thanks for calling the Kevin and Bean Show.
Yeah, so there was both of us going for the same spot. I got the spot. She was very upset, and when I got out of my car, she ended up keying my car.
She keyed it? How old was she?
She keyed my car. I saw her do it from the shop that I was in, and I went out and screamed at her, and I ended up doing a citizen's arrest. The police came out, issued her a ticket, and she went to court, and in court, she when she testified, she said, there's no way he could have seen me do it.
What?
She was found guilty.
Awesome. You made a citizen's arrest. This is better than we could have expected.
Yeah.
Kevin asked you, how old was this woman?
She was probably in her mid-40s, and she lived in Beverly Hills.
Wow, she's nice. Definitely too old to be keying cars, let's face it.
She's like my mother's age.
How did you hold on to her with the citizen's arrest? You sit on top of her in the parking lot?
No, you know, it's actually much more simple. The police came out and they basically just said you have to go up to her and say I'm performing a citizen's arrest, and that's pretty much it.
Sweet. Wow. Well, you won, but did she have to pay to get your car repaired?
I was awarded restitution, but she never actually paid it.
All right.
Not the
happy
beauty.
Setting. All yeah. right, Rob. Go justice system. Thanks so much. 1-800-520-1067. Parking lot confrontations. Your calls are next on the Kevin and Bean Show. Talking about parking wars here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Jeff Garland, the comedian, actor from Curb Your Enthusiasm, ended up smashing in a lady's window in a dispute over a parking space.
She says.
And we're getting your stories at 1-800-520-1067. Here's one from the email. Elizabeth writes in, yeah, it happens to everyone. You get to a spot at the same time as someone else. I agree with you guys. You put on your blinker. That basically means you have dibs. But sometimes they still think they have a chance and they cut you off. Kevin, here's what I do.
How dare you?
I grab a cart and then I keep cutting them off inside the store. Yes, I have aisle rage as well. So
oh
she takes
God.
It inside.
That's absurd.
Let's go to Barbara. She's on line 7. Get us going with some more calls about parking lot rage.
Hey, Barbara.
Hey. I was waiting in the mall parking lot, and a good lady was loading her car up with her baby and everything else, so I was there for some time. She pulls out in front of me. The guy comes down the other way and pulls into my spot.
Oh, steals it right from you after you've been waiting for it.
Yeah, so I let air out of his tires because I know he only has one spare, so he has two flat tires.
Oh, no.
Really? When was this?
Oh, this wasn't that long ago. It was just at the mall over there in Mission Viejo.
Love it.
I know you were mad that day, but now that you've had some time to reflect on it, do you think that that was an appropriate response?
I think I should have flattened the other tires.
Okay. All right. Lesson learned. Thank
I'm good
you very
with
much
that.
For the call.
Thank you, Barbara.
Let's try Danielle. She's got a crazy story. She's on line 2.
Hey, Danielle.
Hey. Hey, Kevin and Bean. Hey, Lisa May.
Hello.
You got a fight?
Well, almost. I'm pulling into a parking structure, and I'm making a right, and this motorcycle is making a left to turn into it. He thinks I cut him off. I was there first. He comes up right next to me, and my window's down. He starts revving his little crotch rocket motorcycle, thinking he's all tough, going crazy. And I'm like, okay, chill out. Leave me alone. Go away. And the parking attendant's like, hey, get out of here. Stop doing that. And it gets to the point where he's starting to yell at me, cuss at me, call me names. He puts his fist up like he's going to, swing at me. I'm a tiny girl. I'm pretty small, so I have pepper spray. I pull it out, and I'm like, look, it's going to come to this if you don't leave me alone. Like, I'm really going to use this. And the parking attendant eventually lets me in, and the guy just, I leave him behind me. I don't
look
see
at you.
Fun. Yeah.
So the answer is, if you want to win that parking space battle, carry pepper spray with you, right?
Hey, I'm like 5'3", 110. I'm a small girl. I got to do what I got to do.
You got to do what you got to do when you're a midget.
All right. Yep. Thank you, Danielle. Appreciate that.
Thank you for the call.
Let's go to Barbara on line 3. I'm not even going to mention how many of these parking lot disputes involve women. Not even gonna bring that up. I'm going to point out how many of these in a row are girls.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. So about 5 years ago, I went to the Orange County Fair, and parking was an absolute mess. So I got out of the car. Mind you, I'm 7 months pregnant.
Oh.
I did dibs on a parking spot while my boyfriend was coming back around.
Oh, so you got out of the car, went over, and stood there in the place?
Yeah, great idea. Ooh, right?
Not everyone recognizes that.
So this guy comes up in like a big old Hummer of some sort, and he just keeps on inching his way, and I'm like, no, not going to happen.
He was trying to park where you were standing, and he was inching closer and closer.
And I was inching closer and closer to him. I'm like, basically, at the end of it, I was like, go ahead and hit me. See what happens.
You do not want to mess with a pregnant woman.
No.
Nope.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
So what happened? Did he give up and back out and go take another space?
Yeah, he did. He did.
All right.
I was that intimidating.
Did you follow over? Follow him over there and beat him up?
No. I was just happy not to gotten run over and to have gotten the spot.
Now, Barbara, hold on 1 second. I have to ask the room here. What is your guy's policy on you pull up to a space, there's no car in sight, and there's a person standing in it holding it for someone? Do you recognize that as legal?
I don't know. I've never had that happen.
I think I did it once.
You stood there?
Yeah. I can't remember what the situation was, but
chicks.
I did do it once.
It's all girls.
I think that's it. Thank you, Barbara.
I'm not going to run them over.
Let's. I just wondered. I mean, is that fair to hold a space for somebody if there's
probably
already
not
another car there? Because you don't own the land; it's a public parking
right
lot. There's another car there that is ready to move into that space. Is it fair to say no? My friend's coming in.
I think
minute.
It's not fair, but there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, your options are go somewhere else or run the person over.
Let's talk to Ashley real quick. She's a girl, and she's on line 6 of the Kevin Beach Show.
It's pretty funny.
Who knew we would get all girls? I figured we'd get all guys with the road rage thing. Hey, Ashley.
Hi. So my neighborhood is horrible to park in. It's a whole bunch of apartment complexes with not enough parking.
Right.
And I spent about 20 minutes after I got home really late one day and trying to find parking. I finally found a spot, and I'm about to back into it, and all of a sudden this car comes up behind me and is halfway blocking the way for me to get in. And there's another car that's kind of stopped on the opposite end of traffic, so he can't get around me.
Okay, so you're both kind of at an impasse now?
Kind of, yeah. And he starts honking his horn at me like crazy. So I pull up so he can get around, and he takes my spot.
Oh.
And I was furious. I went around the block, I found dog poop, and shoved it under his door handle.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And see you. Nice surprise in the morning.
Yes.
Hey, comic book legend Stan Lee joins us in less than 1 hour from right now on the Kevin Bean Show. Stick around for that. Also, in just a few minutes, we're going to give you some tickets to go to Lucha Vavoom at the Mayan. So that's coming up this hour on K-Rock.
That's so awesome, the Lucha Vavoom. You're going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do the Wheel of Bad Animal Voices, shall we?
Yay!
We have an actual wheel that has on it a lot of animal stories. Killer Chinese giant hornets, Ty the tiger with the world's largest hairball, Paku, testicle-biting Scandinavian fish.
Oh, dear God.
The Belgian coked-up racing pigeons, Willie the foul-mouthed cockatoo, the lucky dog, evaded dog catchers 92 times, and the
wow
giant Iranian rats.
Wow. A lot of great stories.
It's time for the Wheel of Animal Voices. Where do you think it's gonna land?
Don't know.
It's gonna be pretty bad, but Kevin and me don't care, so we'll do it anyway. It's time for the Wheel of Animal Voices.
Hey, was I zoning out? Did we lose the man-faced dog or the man-faced
yes
lion or whatever it was? Is that gone? Did that not? It got,
I think
removed
we moved
from the wheel.
It fell off.
I think if it doesn't land on it at some point, you just got to move on.
It never landed on that. We were so curious about that. All right, let's spin the wheel. Let's find out who we're going to be talking to today.
That was a particularly good spin. Oh, it's the Belgian coked-up racing pigeons.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic.
I guess pigeon racing really is a thing, and it's apparently a high-stakes sport in some places throughout the world. Lisa Bay, this is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
That a famous Belgian racing pigeon recently sold, are you ready for this, for $400,000.
What?
So it could be a stud, so it could breed new pigeons.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
So what they do is they take them away from their home to a location far away, and then they just let them go, and then they race, I guess, back to the home.
That's right. Yeah, they race hundreds of miles sometimes. I mean, people are really, really into it. It's a huge sport in a lot of the world where people place giant bets on them, and these birds become celebrities.
Here's my favorite part. 6 racing pigeons in Belgium were found to have been doped with drugs. Such as cocaine and painkillers.
Oh, my God.
That's terrible.
These
pigeons are snorting coke before they fly.
People are bad.
People are terrible.
But they're pigeons.
Yeah, yes, but you don't want to force drugs on them.
Oh,
they can't
pigeons
enjoy that, but they sure fly fast.
They really fly fast.
We asked producer Dave, could you please line somebody up for us that we could talk to who's into the Belgian pigeon racing? And I believe we have a spokesperson on the phone with us right now. Hello there.
Hey, how's it going, guys? How you doing?
this is the pigeon, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm one of the pigeons.
Yeah.
My name is Walter.
Walter. Hi, Walter.
Walter.
Hey. How long have you been racing?
I don't know, man. I feel like I've been racing for years, man.
Walter?
How's it going? Racing for years, right, man?
Okay,
right?
Walter,
right?
Calm down. Calm down. Steady, son. All right. No more. You don't need any more.
What do you got? You got a question? What do you got?
Yes.
What do you got? You got a question? You got a question for me? You got a question? What do you got?
So you and the other five pigeons
found. Yeah, six of us, but plus me. I'm one.
Right.
I'm one, and the other guys are five. Five plus one is six.
And
six pigeons.
And you're all doing the cocaine?
What? No, man. Why do you say that? We're not doing cocaine, man. I don't know. You know. How about innocent until proven guilty, huh, man? How about some testing? How about we'll take a little test?
They did.
See if we're doing that cocaine. You know, you just go around just pointing fingers at people and say, that guy's doing cocaine. You can't just say that,
hey,
man.
Walter?
You gotta know if somebody's doing cocaine or not. You gotta take him, you gotta do it.
Hey, Walter?
I gotta get a urine analysis, I gotta get a blood test or nothing. People just point at me and say, that patient's on cocaine. What do you know?
Hey, Walter.
They
tested your blood.
What do you got?
They actually tested your blood. You have cocaine in it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, you're right. How about the chain of evidence, man? How about the blood comes from me, and then I don't know where it goes. It goes right to the lab. There's somebody in between. How does it get there? How does it get from me to the lab? How does it get there, man?
What's your record? Walter, what's your record in racing?
What?
What's your record?
I'm unbeaten, man. I'm like 27-0, man. Yeah. 27-0. What do you got?
Walter, you got to put it down, man. You're going to die. Your heart's going to explode.
Hey, don't worry about my heart. Worry about your heart, man. What are you, some sort of cardiologist? Oh, put me on a treadmill. Give me a test. I don't care. Test me. I don't write. Put me on the thing. Are you going to take an exam in me or something? You some sort of pigeon doctor? What do you got, some sort of degree in pigeon physiology or something?
Yes,
what do you know about pigeons?
We are pigeon doctors.
Are you really? Yeah, okay. I should have known that, but we're talking all about pigeons and stuff. I'm a pigeon. I think I may know a little bit more pigeons than you do. Do you have wings? Do you have feathers? No. Do you have a beak? No, man. You don't got one.
I think we should let Walter go before.
What do you got? Come on. What do you got?
Walter, you need to lie down. Seriously, take a nap.
That's the last thing I'm going to do, man. No way I'm lying down. I'm flying, baby. I'm flying for me. I'm flying to there. I'm flying to your house. I'm flying to my house.
Wow.
I'll fly anywhere. Okay. I'm flying all day, baby. Can't keep me down.
Right.
Skies are for birds, man.
All right.
I just can't believe Jeffrey Ross and Jay Moore both on the same show. It's like April Foolishness in January up in the Kevin and Bean Show today, isn't it? It's crazy.
Up in. Nice. Nice work.
It's an expression, man. You got to get out there with the kids every once in a while. I like going to the unusual roadside attractions, as you know. That's my whole thing. I mean, I went to the radio museum when I was in Stockholm over the summer. I love museums. I just love seeing what people put together.
Love like the world's largest boot that we had to stop at in Texas, and you love the world's largest ball of twine.
Right.
I enjoy world's largest also, but we're talking about museums here. And I love going, I mean, I go, I've been to the, you know, obviously I've been to the post office museum, but I mean, there's museums all over this great country, all over this great world that I go to, and I'm always interested to hear about new, you know, museums dedicated to topics that otherwise wouldn't get the attention. I don't know that this is one I'm going to.
How would you not want to go to South Korea's toilet theme park?
It's right up your alley.
How would you not want to go to that?
I do not have the same fascination with toilets that a lot of people on this show do, Omar.
Right. No, I can understand that. And I don't, but it's an entire theme park / museum dedicated to the toilet.
Look,
to go just to say, what's this all about? I mean, you really have to check it out.
Even before you get inside the toilet museum, which is shaped in the shape of a toilet, even before you get in it, you got to walk past all of the statues of the guys squatting out in front on the yard.
Yes, covered in gold.
You would love that.
Well, I don't want to see. I'm not interested in that.
You are.
How could you not be?
Look, if you
I'm
take
interested
one,
in that.
If you take one thing away from today's show, it's that pooping is private.
Not in South Korea. It's not. I'll tell you that. I just posted the video on Twitter at the Kevin Ryder, and it is spectacular. The BBC did a report on it, and here's some of that report.
Welcome to South Korea's one and only toilet park, a theme park devoted exclusively to the culture.
Come on, it's a theme park. It's not just a museum. There's got to be rides and stuff, right?
I love it.
And food?
Oh, no, not food.
Of
please
toilets.
No.
This place was built in memory of Suwon's former mayor, a man affectionately known as Mr. Toilet.
Come on. There was a mayor of that town who was known as Mr. Toilet.
How devastated is DJ Omar Khan that he's not Mr. Toilet?
He was reportedly born in his grandmother's loo.
All right, I just
I'm
like
sorry,
to
what?
Yes, I just like to clarify. Loo is, of course, another word for toilet.
Yes.
This dude was supposedly born in his grandmother's toilet.
And that's why the lifelong fascination with the toilet?
That, well, that's what they say, but I mean, I can't imagine that you remember when and where you were born. So how does
you
that...
You wouldn't.
No,
and
he would have
been
told
had a lifelong
that.
Obsession with promoting better public toilets.
Oh, that's sweet, isn't it?
So much so that he even built a toilet-shaped house to live in.
All right, so the toilet-shaped house is literally that. Look at this picture, Lisa. It is... Wow. If you look at it from the air, if you're in an airplane and you fly over it.
That's his house?
It's in the shape of a toilet. Yes.
What does that look like inside, I wonder?
Oh, well, you'll find out.
Okay.
Now converted to a museum, complete with the original toilet.
Of course, you want the original one. You want the one where the guy was born. Because that's now, history right there.
Do they have famous toilets through history? I mean, is, you know, the toilet Elvis died on, is that in the museum?
I don't know.
That sort of thing?
I don't know if they collect them from around the world. I'm not sure. It was hard for me to get past the guys, like Lisa was saying, squatting in the front.
In gold.
Covered in gold. That just seems like a photo op that you wouldn't be able to pass up.
The mayor's interest in toilets and his embarrassment at South Korea's old-fashioned public conveniences sparked a sort of toilet revolution here in Suwon.
Look at that. That guy started a revolution.
He sure did.
Crazy, right?
That's a big deal.
What about all of the artwork, the paintings on the wall of toilets? What about that?
How? You're there. Let's say you're there. Maybe you're in South Korea.
Yes, I'm in South Korea.
How do you not go to this place?
If I lived in South Korea for my entire rest of my life, I would not go to this place.
If you lived in this house, you wouldn't see the rest of it.
I wouldn't see it, right.
Now the city not only attracts toilet-related artwork... and holds the locally renowned Golden Poop Art Festival.
Okay. All right. I'm out. I got to go. Seriously, I got to go.
They have an entire festival called the Golden Poop Festival.
Come on.
Are you kidding me?
And I thought South Korea was the good guys. I thought North Korea was the honked up ones.
And we've been wasting our time with the ones in Southern California. It's a poop festival.
It also lists dozens of its public toilets as tourist sites on the city council website.
That's right. So you go there and you want to see the sites. They list certain public toilets to go check out because they're the good ones, I guess.
We just focus on eating every day. We sometimes overlook the importance of a toilet.
All right. Now, this is their spokesperson who has a really tough job because can you imagine being like somebody's job is to defend the toilet museum and theme park? You know, she has to do interviews with guys like us all day long.
Yeah. She does PR and promotion for that. And,
her
message is don't think much about the food going in. We want to talk about the food coming out.
But
right?
We already know upon waking up in the morning, we should go to... toilet.
All right.
But people don't want to talk about this.
Right.
So we just dedicate to public and toilet culture. So it means toilet is not only toilet for us. Toilet can be cultural space.
It can be a cultural space. A toilet is a nice cultural space. Like, let's say you have a couple of hours to burn. You go hang out in the toilet.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And it's a so important space for health, sanitation.
Now, she's going to try and hold it together here, but she does start laughing at the end.
And water conservation. So we call this kind of the culture, toilet culture like this.
What did they
we
call
this kind of culture the toilet culture, and she starts laughing.
Even she realizes how ridiculous her job is.
Most of those here at the park today were under 5.
All right, so maybe the average age is younger than me.
Sounds about right.
The kind of audience perhaps most curious about the attractions offered here. But then South Koreans are less squeamish anyway about this kind of thing.
Please be done.
Happy to immortalize their most intimate ritual.
Isn't that enough?
What, be done with Mr. Toilet?
Yes, I'm done with Mr. Toilet.
The
Come
habits,
on.
The history, the facial expressions, and yes, even the poop.
Even the poop.
Oh, no.
The facial expression?
Wouldn't you like to see, like, you walk into a room, it's a long hallway, and there's artwork on both sides of the wall of the facial expressions?
People squatting with facial different facial expressions?
Come on, Dean.
I'm out. I'm sorry.
Poop festival.
I can't.
We have a festival of poop.
I just can't. But have a great day. Michael emails, by the way, hey, guys, if you go to the toilet museum, bring me back an apple cider and an O. Henry bar from the snack bar. Nope. Not going to bring you any foods or drinks that look like either of those. And that song right there is why K-Rock is the station that everyone can agree on at work. Rage Against the Machine to get you going here on a Wednesday morning at 106.7 KRQ, 623. Ralph, I don't like where this is headed. I don't like this one little bit.
As we look back over 2013, we'd be going through some top 10 lists of some of the segments we do here on the Kevin and Bean Show. And I think it's only appropriate that we take a look at one of everyone's favorite segments. Thanks for that tweet, Bean.
Let me tell you a story about a douchebag named Bean. His favorite hobby's not cheap, it's really tweeting. Oh, you suck, Bean, you suck so freaking much. I don't know why you tweet so much, because no one gives a Oh, you suck, Bean, you suck so freaking much. Here come the top 10 Bean tweets, and they all freaking suck.
At two, Omar.
The top 10... Thanks for that tweet, Beans of the Year. It used to be Bean would just subject us with his inanity and his horrible jokes and his pointless information in between songs or on the air on the Kevin and Bean Show. And then with the advent of new technology, now he can punish the world by tweeting out that same information. And he's done it a ton this year. These are the top 10 worst tweets Bean released or escaped out of Bean's phone into the world this year. Yeah.
How did you narrow it down?
Seriously. It wasn't easy, but we think we came up with a pretty good list.
Okay.
Remind me to tell you about the knife fight I once got in arguing over Eddie Rabbit's Driving My Life Away versus I Love a Rainy Night.
Now, what's the problem with that?
Shut up. And again, we don't need you to explain these. We're just merely telling people how horrible you are. These are the top 10. No one cares about Eddie Rabbit or any of those songs or any other band you've ever tweeted about, quite frankly.
Number 9.
Remember how sad you were the day you realized Cutting Crew wouldn't be putting out another album?
At least that's the 80s, Ralph.
No.
What?
One. Stop it.
What?
Stop it.
This was this year?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This year.
Wow.
Number 8.
Not trying to be controversial, but I'm just saying that Car Wash is the best song ever about a car wash.
And that's true, by the way.
Yeah, right? Well, we sure were debating that in the halls.
F you. Hard.
Number 7.
Am I the only one rolling deep to an evening with John Denver on this Friday night? Or just the only one cool enough to admit it?
It does seem like there's a theme to some of these
tweets
that you've selected.
Do you think?
Number 6.
I need today to be a cashew day. I've had too many Brazil nut days this week. Come on, Saturday, let's do this.
Yeah, that should be number 1.
That, well, Lisa, you think until you get to number 1. You're going to say, oh, my God. That was a very memorable one.
I got a lot of traction on my nut scale with followers of my Twitter account at Clyde Tubba. I just want you to know. Number 5.
Look, I can either rock and roll all night or I can party every day, but I just can't do both. Don't be unreasonable.
I still like that.
Did these gems just pop into your head, or do you really work on those and craft them?
From a Kiss song from the 70s, he's making a lame-ass joke.
Number 4.
Why are scientists still debating what killed the dinosaurs instead of just asking Larry King what he saw?
He's really old, Ralph. Man. Larry King is ancient.
You're like the worst hack comedian who they just give a Twitter account to. You're going to do Larry King is old jokes?
Yes. Have you not noticed?
What's next? Airplane food is bad?
That's a matter of fact. Number 3.
Come back to us, Billy Ocean. All is forgiven.
Shut up, Omar. Didn't it just seem like he just vanished? Like he just went away? What's up with that?
Holy crap.
Number 2, I think we're up to.
Why would we ever need to be chasing waterfalls anyway? They don't go anywhere. They're not tornadoes.
See, I'm saying that the lyrics to that song were fundamentally flawed, Ralph, and it's about time somebody stood up and took on TLC.
You're an ass.
Oh, boy.
Finally, the number 1 worst tweet of the year from Bean, from Thanks for That Tweet, Bean. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah!
Really?
That was a tweet.
Why?
He just tweeted that. What? That's all. That's all. That just went out.
Bean sucks.
I'm going to be tweeting that all morning.
Those were the top 10 bee tweets, and they all freaking sucked.
If you are under 30 and you're totally cool, then you absolutely know these guys.
And they're out
the Lonely Island.
Take a look inside. Is my in a box?
In my pants.
This rule, it ever happens, you can take my word. I won't apologize, that's just absurd.
I'm on a boat, just it's on. Good on low. Just it's a It never go with saunas, cause they're crawling with piranhas. And never take the stairs, cause they're off to the safe. You only live once, don't let it go to waste.
It's okay, when it's in a three-way. It's not gay, when it's in a three-way.
Spring break, y'all!
Up.
You can rally.
That's what's up.
Booze crew.
Raise your glass.
Start that coke off her ass.
Yo, it's the Lonely Island. We got my man Yorm. Keeves in the house. And me, you know who the F I am. Hey, yo, new Lonely Island. 2013.
Ladies and gentlemen, Yorm is here, Keeves is here, and you know who that guy is. Lonely Island on the Kevin and Bean Show here on K-Rock.
Our whole lives just flashed before our ears.
That is an absurd montage.
It was so great. That made me feel really, really excited.
Who put that together?
Our guy Omar in the other room.
Thanks, Omar. Yeah. Omar from The Wire?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that remarkably
I'm glad
same
to hear
guy.
He's okay.
That series ended, and he's here working for us.
Got a new gig.
Now, does it pain you guys? Do you feel like your songs are butchered when you have to hear us beep them?
No.
Oh,
no.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you guys are speaking an entirely different language than what we're allowed to speak, unfortunately, and it kills us, but that's, you know. That's
I was going to say, as soon as it started, I was like, oh, I hope they censored this. And then I remembered we brought Yorm with us. I was like, there's no point. I'm here in your room.
Well, the Lonely Island is here because their new record is coming out called the Whack Album. It's going to be released this Tuesday. It is the third. How are you guys up to three albums already? This is crazy.
There's just no shortage of ideas. You know, it's like an endless supply of great comedy ideas.
Great new ideas.
Am I great? Some of them are just so absurd. I just am curious. Like, I'd like to see the list of stuff that almost made it.
There's some
ideas.
The stuff that doesn't make it is so asinine and like
some of the
niche.
Stuff that does make it is asinine.
Yeah. I mean, so asinine.
Do you want to explain? Do you want to let the cat out of the bag on any of them? I don't want to start on one and then. But I have one in my mind.
You have one that you wished had made it, or
we could talk about one.
Yeah, we did one song that did not make the cut.
Okay.
We did a few, but this one's.
We had an idea for a song. You know, in reggae, they talk about Zion a lot.
Uh-huh. Sure.
We had this sort of faux reggae track that was inspiring us, and we recorded a whole song, and it was all about Zion, but it's revealed very early on that we're talking about Zion from The Matrix. And, like, all the lines are like, you know, Agent Smith is ever looming.
real details.
All
about
the parties are against fire code.
Yeah, it's really about the multicultural, like, dreadlock.
Yeah.
We tried to find all the similarities also between, like, reggae music and the Zion.
Yeah,
which is
really, it toes the line. Yes. But yeah, that's something that was not good enough.
How
for the
exactly
album.
Do you guys decide? Is it a straight up vote? Because three of you, so
that one just sounded bad.
Yeah, you all agreed.
That
on
was
not,
unanimous.
Not putting that one.
I mean, we've put out bad sounding ones before, though.
That is true.
Generally, you know, the three of us will decide, but we'll also play for our friends and stuff. And a lot of times they'll be like, "Oh, that's funny, but you can't do that."
We like it, but don't put it on the album.
Yeah.
Incredibad came out in 2009. Turtleneck and Chain came out in 2011. The new one, the Whack album, comes out on Tuesday. What were you guys all doing together to amuse each other before you started making songs and videos?
Kind of, basically the same stuff. We just weren't putting it to beats. But it was more or less
just a cappella?
Yeah. Yeah. Just a lot of freestyling on the corner.
You have a guitar case out so people can leave a dollar.
We've been friends since junior high, high school. We all grew up in Berkeley, California together. Yeah. So it's pretty much been the same vibe since then. We just
Your bio says you started making videos in the year 2000.
Yeah.
That's like 5 years before you went to SNL, right?
Yeah.
We made a few things in high school, but they were mostly us messing around.
But I like to look back at the timeline because at 2000 is right when the, you know, music videos just died. And then you guys were like, let's do music videos.
Honestly, there was nowhere to put them. I remember showing my boss at where I was just an assistant, like a music video. And he was like, great, but what do you do with that?
There was no YouTube.
There was no YouTube.
Wow.
He said, what do you do with that? And I went home and I was like, we need to make a 22-minute thing. We can kind of put these into it. And it was kind of like for television, basically.
For like
that
a half-hour TV show.
Yeah. There were a few sites, Heavy.com at the time, and an iFilm and Adam Film and stuff like that.
Isn't it hard to remember before YouTube?
Yeah.
It sure is.
But also, people didn't have fast enough internet connections to actually watch those sites. Really, very few people could even see those sites.
You could almost say we were drilling for oil in empty fields.
Why then were you making music videos?
We just had a sixth sense that there would be this bastion of oil called YouTube.
when you guys are in high school, are you in talent competitions? Are you performing on stage at school or anything like that? Or are you performing at parties? Are you doing anything live?
We're not doing any. No,
bar mitzvahs?
I did some theater.
Theater, yeah. I did some theater in Berkeley, yeah. But no.
What was the most highbrow theater that you did at Berkeley?
My dad's a theater director at the Berkeley Repertory Theater. He's an artistic director.
Name drop.
Yeah. Tony Taccone. I know my dad, you guys.
So everyone hated you because you were in productions and didn't deserve it. Right?
Yeah, a few people.
Because you knew the director.
Yeah.
How disappointed is he in you now, though? You're almost serious.
It is, actually. It's funny because, he works with people like Tony Kushner and, some of the greatest minds of our, literary minds of our of last, this generation, basically. And then I make songs about my penis.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah.
So, pretty embarrassing.
Have you played him I F'd My Aunt? Have you played him that song?
I have been trying to avoid talking about that song with my family. I got a text recently from my uncle that was like, so should I be worried? And I was like, oh no, I was talking about a different aunt.
Thanksgiving is going to be awkward at your house this year. Anyway.
All of our houses.
To be fair, Yorm's aunt is super hot.
On the record. This is the voice of the guys in the Lonely Island here on the Kevin DeBede Show. We're talking about, among other things, the new album coming out called The Whack Album. It'll be out on Tuesday. We'll be playing some stuff from it up here in a minute. Tell me what it was like when the joke became a reality and you ended up being on stage accepting an Emmy for Blank in a Box. Tell me how that moment felt compared to what you ever expected would happen with this nonsense.
I would describe it as the exact opposite of what we expected, but a pleasant opposite.
But right? Didn't you feel
shocking.
Why are we up here, and how long is it going to take people to realize that it's us and then kick us out?
It's just weird that you can even print that on an Emmy, that it's not censored on an Emmy. It's just a joke in itself. It's fantastic.
It's also, you don't generally win Emmys for songs. There's a whole other award show for song, for music.
Yeah. Right? What's it called?
It's called the Grammys.
Oh. Yeah.
Did we win one of those, Keith?
No.
Yeah, don't worry about those. Great.
By the way, you could have said eight other shows that you win awards for.
Billboard awards.
There's a deep, deep pocket of those.
Now, let me ask you this. I think I'm going to direct this to Andy first, but please, everybody, weigh in, because I've been fascinated in reading up in your current series of interviews that you really downplay your rapping and musical ability.
Yeah.
But you guys are really talented at that. Why is it why do you make it seem so much like you guys don't think you're good?
Well, we don't think we are. That's probably why. We're comedians, and that's all we had ever really intended to do. So we kind of view it as we're delivering comedy through the vessel of music and through hip-hop and R&B and pop and stuff like that. And especially now, having worked with so many legit artists, you see what that really is.
You're at least as good as T-Pain, though. Come on.
No, T-Pain kills, man. T-Pain is a really good singer. T-Pain's a double threat, though, because he's funny, too.
And he can rap.
Huge comedy.
And he can rap. On his mixtapes, he raps.
But don't you hear a lot of legitimate, not comedy rappers on the radio that you're just as good as, though?
Yeah.
But that's all I'm saying.
But that,
I'm
does, saying but that doesn't saying mean they sell yourself.
Name th- some.
That just means there's some bad rappers. There are rappers out there that are as bad as us, which is not great.
Ah, yeah, that's the way to put it.
But yeah, they're not funny, so then you only got
I wouldn't some trade. Kind of I wouldn't trade.
Exactly. All right, the Whack album comes out on Tuesday. So many great guests, and I know people always you know, concentrate on that, but Robin and Pharrell Williams and Adam Levine, Kendrick Lamar, Hugh Jackman, Kristen Wiig, Billy Joe Armstrong is on the record.
Yeah.
Timberlake, Gaga, Too Short, so many great stars, so many great songs. We'll play some and talk some more with The Lonely Island here on The Kevin DeBean Show when we return right after this on K-Rock.
Kevin DeBean, new Kevin DeBean theme by The Lonely Island. They're going to play it every day from now on. Contractually bound to play it every day. And they will get sued if they don't.
And we have. We've played that every day since.
So, you know.
Our lawyers have been listening.
Lonely Island in studio with us here on the Kevin DeBean Show. The Whack album is available everywhere on Tuesday. It is their third record. Hey, so Saturday Night Live was a thing that the videos you were used to be on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not so much anymore? Or what's the new arrangement going to be like?
We don't even really know. I mean, we still have a great relationship there. And, you know, when Adam Levine hosted, we did YOLO, and Lauren asked us to come do that one, and it was great. And we came on when Timberlake hosted and did a live sketch because that's what Justin wanted to do.
What Justin wants, he gets, right?
Oh, yeah.
In life. In life. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you don't even have a choice.
Andy, you went to work one day when you were filming, I guess it was the three-way, where you're in bed with Justin Timberlake. I mean, that's what you're doing for a job that day.
And Gaga.
And Gaga at 1.2, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way,
between
you're
those
wrong.
Two, I'm picking Timberlake.
You're wrong about the golden rule of three ways, by the way, being it's not gay if there's a chick in between. That is not an appropriate three way, two guys and a girl. That is unacceptable. The only appropriate three way is two girls and a guy.
It says that in the Bible.
Is two girls and a guy?
In the Bible, yeah. Yes. Two girls and a guy is the only three way that counts.
A lot of people think the only proper three way is two girls, one cup.
Completely unrelated.
Nobody thinks that. Yep. Yeah. No one thinks that?
I don't think anyone thinks that.
I bet you there's someone somewhere who thinks that. And that person is the cup.
It's a very happy cup.
You guys clearly have not seen the video. I don't know how happy I am.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it entails. I just have heard the phrase.
Yeah.
Sure.
So in other words, you probably will appear on SNL again next year. You expect there'll be occasions where there'll still be Lonely Island videos popping up or not?
Oh, when it comes to SNL, I never expect anything. But we certainly still love the show and hope to keep doing stuff there. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Okay. All right, let's talk about some of the songs in the new album. What's your favorite? What's your favorite track on the new record?
Man. So many to choose from.
They're all so good.
We did one with Too Short. For us, that's a big deal because we grew up in the Bay Area listening to him. It's called
How old is that dude now, Too Short?
He has aged. I was in the studio with him when he recorded, and he did not seem that old. He was spry, and he was thin. And he was.
But rappers are grown up now. Yeah,
he's a grown man. But
he might be a Benjamin Button.
It could be.
He's going backwards.
Was he aware of you when you contacted him to be on that song, The Compliments?
We weren't sure, but in the studio, he seemed to know our stuff. Either he could have quickly seen it on his way over, or he really knew
Gotta
it.
Gotta catch
which,
up
which
quick.
Is, which is kind of amazing because we were listening to his stuff when we were like 10 years old, which is entirely inappropriate. But I've been fans with him for forever.
I remember him. I was a huge fan of his in the 80s. It seems like that's kind of when it was probably his most popular period, so I'm sure a lot of people were. But, yeah, he was terrific. And I thought it was interesting to see that you guys have said that when you have a rapper come in, you let them write their raps for you for the song, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, we'll like give them bullet points kind of under the comedic umbrella of the premise, and then it's really hard to write a rap verse for a professional rapper.
You tell us.
You know, with a singer, a lot of times they're used to having a hook written and then they come in and make it sound pretty, whereas with a rapper, their style and swag, if you will,
sure,
is kind of what their entire careers are based on. So to it's almost insulting to be like, hey, we wrote your verse. That's ghostwriting in a way that is deemed inappropriate.
Yeah, some of them take pride in the fact that they've written every word they've ever said.
Did you learn that the hard way? Did you write for somebody?
And I'm not going to name names, but there are some rappers where we've done a verse that was a temp, and they went, no, I'll just do that. So it goes, and there's been a few on this record, the other one, and then there's some that come in, and we just bullet point, and then they kind of connect the dots and make their own put in their own words.
Right.
But isn't it great, though, the sense of humor that you have discovered in some of these people that you have kind of trusted them to come up with something? And it seems like most of the time it comes back and it's real funny.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. E-40 like kind of blew our minds, honestly.
Yeah, that was his first
album. Was really, really amazing on Santana DVD.
It's got to be fun for them, too, because they don't get to joke around much. No. Most of them, you know, with their raps.
Although he's pretty funny on his own records. That's why we're such big fans.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Semicolon. You performed it last night on our friend Jimmy Kimmel's show.
Yeah.
Solange was not available, so you had Alanis Morissette in a schoolgirl outfit, which is something that I so desperately wanted to have happen about 15 years ago. So you did make that dream finally come true.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
How'd you hook her up for the live appearance last night?
We just reached out. You know, the premise of that song is grammar, and it's poorness.
Well said.
Well put.
I have a little bit of that if we want to play it.
I'll try it.
Here's a little bit of Semicolon.
Right under your nose, semicolon, mouth, opposite and north, semicolon, south, right over your home, semicolon, attic, hooked on semicolons, semicolon, attic.
So you call up Alanis Morissette and you go, okay, it's a song we have about grammar, but we think it's funny.
We think it's funny.
How's that pitch go?
And she was just like, I'm on board.
Well, she heard the whole song before we talked to her.
Oh, she did.
So she knew that in the end that the pin gets, you know, taken out, and we realized that we've been using semicolons incorrectly. I mean, the whole gist was a chance to talk about ironic and semicolon sort of in the same breath and be like...
Brilliant. I didn't even put two together. That's very funny.
On the show, she interrupts the song midway through on Kimmel's show and says, guys, and these songs should be colons or commas or whatever. They're not semicolons. Andy says...
Yeah, I'm like, oh, so you're correcting our grammar. And she says, yes. And I say, I got to say, coming from you, that's a little ironic.
Is it the best song ever written about a semicolon, in your opinion?
Easily.
Yeah, I think we can say that with confidence.
I put it in the top five, for sure.
And thank you. Solange is great on the record, too, by the way. And that's the thing. That's what I was at, when I was asking you earlier about how you guys play down your musical talent. I mean, that hook that you wrote that Solange sings is as good as anything on the radio today.
Well, thank you. You should hear the temp version with me singing, and then you'll be like, oh, I get it. Solange is good.
Kevin, do we have time before we have to take another break with The Lonely Island here on the Kevin Beach Show? Do we have time to play Spell It Out, because it's kind of short, and I think it's actually clean.
Sure, we can play it. All right.
Anything we want to know about this before we hit it?
It's just, you know, it's just a song.
There you go. It's just a song from Lonely Island.
Yo, it's the Lonely Island. We got my man Yorm, Keeves in the house, and me, you know who the F I am, and if not, let me spell it out. They call me DUDETHETHEPIGSFORMONEYYBUTOLYASASIDETHIGRIGHT. N-O-W-Y-A-P-O-S-T-R-O-M-O-N-E-Y-B-U-T-O-N-L-Y-A-S-H-A-N-D-H-A-V-E-R-O-N-S-I-N-T-H-E-F-I-R-E-B-U-T-I-N-T-H-I-S-E-C-O-N-O-M-Y-I-T-apostrophe-double-L-H-A-V-E-T-O-D-O-M-Y-N-A-M-E-I-S. Lenny!
That's gross.
Yeah, when you spell it out, it sure is. How many cuts did you have to make to be able to sing that song, Andy?
I think there was only three.
I wondered that.
Really?
Are you Tupac? You just walk in and just nail it one time and walk away?
Oh, you're asking if I beast the booth?
Yes.
I was surprised at how well you did that, actually. Yeah.
Three takes. That's impressive. It.
Yeah. Wow. I cannot perform it live, though.
Yeah, that would be tough. Yeah, that's a lot to remember.
I get to read it off of piece of paper,
maybe. D-U-D-E, the first four letters?
Yeah. And then I'm just like, brrrr.
That is Spell It Out from the Whack album, an all-new album from Lonely Island coming out everywhere on Tuesday. We'll take a break. We're going to play some YOLO, by the way, with Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar on K-Rock. And then we'll talk some more with the guys when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean. Along with Adam Levine and Kendrick Lamar, you guys have a wish list of people that you can't wait to come up with a concept that you can invite them to be on a song with you?
Well, we have long since said that we'd like to get Bill Clinton on a track playing saxophone.
That'd be sweet.
Just yeah. our dream.
Yeah.
Just some real sexy, sultry.
I feel like he might do that.
He's in point. LA today doing some event, so maybe he's listening.
Today's
right now.
Today.
I'm sure this is the station he listens to.
And he's just cranking it.
And Barbara Streisand, have you approached her?
We haven't.
No?
I've approached her just in general at like the parties and stuff. Like,
hey, what's going on?
Is she cool?
Yeah. tell us about, we're talking about the WAC album, which comes out Everywhere Tuesday, which is so awesome, by the way. And how many songs have you made videos for, by the way?
For this record specifically?
Yeah.
So it will be five. It'll be five.
We have a video we shot that we're going to put out hopefully on Tuesday. That's a big one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's coming along well.
Yeah, it's for Go Kindergarten, the song with Robin, and it has special guests in it that we won't say who.
Very
awesome.
Yeah.
Tell me about Hugh Jackman and Kristen. Well, Kristen, obviously, you know so well, but tell me about Hugh Jackman. He seems like a guy who's up for anything, and he's on You've Got the Look.
He is on You've Got the Look. He's, you know, he's got the Les Mis pipes.
He does.
And that song is sort of in the style of that band Cameo. Do you remember them?
Oh, sure.
Ow.
Sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah. And we...
Can I hear that again?
Ow.
Word up. Word up.
Word up.
Just go. Can day.
Sorry, didn't mean to...
Can day, right?
He just seems like he has the greatest sense of humor in the world. Like, literally a guy who will do anything for a laugh.
He's a really sweet and funny guy, yeah, and he loves his life. There's people like that you come across who you're like, oh, I understand why you're a huge star. You're having so much fun and so, like, grateful for everything.
But you also come across people who are super successful, and that doesn't bring them any happiness at all, and that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, like Akiva.
Yeah.
This guy's a real downer. Just a real downer.
No bummer.
Let's talk about one more song for the record, and that is I Run New York. Billy Armstrong.
Oh, we're going to talk about it.
Well, yeah.
Also from the Bay.
We're going to play it, but we were hoping
Billy
play part of it.
Billy Joe from Green Day. You know, we've been listening to Green Day since we were in high school because we're from the Bay. They're from the Bay. And, like, even before the Dookie record, I was listening to Green Day. So for us, it was a coup to get him on. But we met him at SNL with those guys, and we had this song, and we wanted somebody who had a little bit more of a rock voice for it. And yeah, I just texted him.
Impressed.
That's the best part of being on SNL is you get to just text the lead singer.
That's awesome.
That's the one crossover with my dad. My dad's worked with him as well because they did American Idiot at the Berkeley Repertory.
There you go.
There you go.
Double name drop.
Had to get it in somewhere.
And I just, you know, I went there and just, like, I watched, you know, and I bought some of those albums with my money.
That's not a very good story.
You guys all have a try. Get out of here.
Be gone, layman.
Name drop, fail.
Sorry.
The song is called I Run New York, and here's Billy Joe, and he's singing about what it would be like to be the mayor of New York, right?
Now on the surface, it probably seems like I should quit, because I spend every day getting punched in the but at night, I travel down into the subway, wearing chain mail, locked and loaded for gunplay, and a gigantic fire-breathing new rat. If I quit, who the would do that?
All right, it's not Billy Joe so much.
What happened to the clip with Billy Joe Armstrong on?
That's the clip we have.
Oh, wow.
Is it going to get there, or is it over right then?
That was over right then. I didn't
fail.
Not only that, but it was at the end of the song where it gets surreal and weird, so it wasn't even about any of the normal
stuff.
That's
our bad. We apologize for
that. Omar, if you're listening, send us in the Billy Joe part. We'd like to play some of that. What's it going to take for you guys, and I know you get asked this all the time, so please forgive me, what's it going to take to have a Lonely Island concert that people can pay to go see you perform on stage?
The lining of planets schedule wise between the three of us.
Have you put together a stage?
That's actually the main thing. Is that if we do a stage show, we want it to be actually good and not thrown together. And so it's less about the time it takes to actually perform a show and more about the months and months that it would take to plan an entire tour just to even do.
Because we've sat down and been about to do it a bunch of times, and basically the way we would want our show to be on par with like The Wall.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Or better.
So you've got low expectations. Good. We do a comedy show called April Foolishness, and every year we ask for Lonely Island, and we keep getting the answer back, which is they don't do shows. They don't do shows.
We don't have a show.
Get it together.
We want to do it.
Do it.
We've performed live, I think, 5 times now, and it's always been on live TV, and
which is
super just the way you want to do it. You want to do your first ever performance of a song where it's on TV and there's a record of it.
We're about to do it on the Guys' Choice Awards, actually.
Yeah,
that's right.
And we did the Kimmel one that you.
And it'll be the first time we perform that song.
Yeah, and we do a different song every time, so we can't even do ourselves a favor and get good at doing one song.
It's terrifying. Shooting yourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
Every time.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Your close personal friend, Weird Al, who I know you guys know and respect, you've seen his stage show, right? And how he does it with the videos and the costume changes and everything
He's
like that?
Great.
It would be very similar to that, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's what you'd need to do if you wanted to kind of bring those songs to life the way you're describing, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems like he'd be the kind of guy to look at and go, well, it's possible at least.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. We think it would be really fun, and we'd love to do it. It's just been...
You smoke too much weed?
Yeah. I wish it was that. Man. We're always working on
it. Even you just saying that, I was like, man, that'd be nice.
Play a video game once in a while.
All right, we have Ira in New York from the other room, Bean, if you want to hear some of that.
Yes, let's hear it. Now, this is what we thought we were setting up. Billy Joe Armstrong himself from Green Day singing on the new Lonely Island song, I Run New York, again from the WAC album coming out on Tuesday. Listen up.
New York, big city of dreams, and you know that I run this town.
I run it.
King of the streets, dressed in concrete, skyscrapers on my crown.
That's awesome.
There you go. There you
All
go.
Right. That was him.
Are there Lonely Island haters? Do you guys ever see people on YouTube who just say you're stupid? Does that ever happen?
Everybody.
I mean,
you can't make anything and put it out into the world without having haters.
But your stuff is stupid. But
thank you.
But hilarious.
Yeah.
So anybody that's prone to hate, I mean,
I remember
you don't make it hard.
Very, very.
It's totally true.
Very early on when we posted stuff, like
pre-YouTube,
there was a comment that we always hold really near and dear to our hearts, which was, "Wow, it's the best of gay retard theater." And we read that one and we were like,
That's the name of your next album.
I was like, I think we did something right here, guys.
That should be the subheading.
That person didn't know that they were catapulting you forward.
Stoking the fire, yeah.
Well, we have been wanting to have you guys in together for a long, long time, and it's such a treat. So fun to have get a chance to spend some time with the Lonely Island. We want to thank you very much for coming into K-Rock today.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. The album is terrific. You guys are going to love it. It is called The WAC Album and is available everywhere on Tuesday. We'll see you guys soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
On the way, we have You Were Falsely Accused, and we're also going to talk to George St. Pierre.
All right.
How about that? From the UFC. I don't know if you saw this story. It's a bizarre story. In 1983, Michael Jackson recorded with Freddie Mercury.
I've never heard that before.
From Queen.
How would we have not known this?
1983. So that was the year before Thriller.
Huh.
So Michael Jackson, Freddie Mercury, both alive at the time, were recording and something went terribly wrong and we haven't heard it. But supposedly, according to the other members of Queen, we're about to hear this music. They're working on producing it and it's going to come out. And we thought it would be a good time to talk to Michael Jackson and find out exactly what's going on. So we check with Michael Jackson in heaven. Hello, Michael.
Jam out! Woo!
How are things going?
Jam out!
Pretty good then.
Woo! Woo!
Hey, Michael.
Hello, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
We are good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for calling me in heaven.
You know, we're always
funny. No one else calls.
We're always happy.
Just you guys talk
to you. Yeah, your family's not calling.
No, nobody else really calls. I think they're busy with litigation right now.
That could be.
Yeah.
Now, this is a weird story that we just found out.
Can I just say for a moment, I was doing my Michael Jackson thing that I do because I'm Michael Jackson, and I was grabbing myself.
Right.
Like I do.
Like he does. Yes.
Yeah. And I really hurt my testicles. I'm in a lot of pain right now. I shouldn't be so thorough when I'm up here dancing.
Wow. Even in heaven, you can hurt your junk?
Can you imagine? You'd think you'd be safe from that in
heaven. Think you'd be able to grab all you want.
Woo. Now I know why I do that.
You all right?
Woo. Woo. Ah. Just need a breath. Okay.
Okay.
Move forward.
Okay. All right. 1983, you recorded with Freddie Mercury.
I did, yes. Freddie and I, we're two great artists working together, and it was one of the truly great collaborations of my career.
Why is it taking 30 years for that music to come out? Why did we not hear a clip, a song?
Well,
the whole thing?
We were in the midst of finalizing it and working it out when Freddie passed.
Oh.
And so we never really... It didn't become a priority because I moved on to other projects. And
I
The band moved on to other projects. But I'm glad to hear that they're putting those songs together and they're going to release them because I think we did some really great work together.
Well, the rest of the story is really even more bizarre. Freddie Mercury, apparently you guys were getting along fine, but you brought a llama to the recording studio.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
That's true?
Sure.
And the recording was going fine, but then Freddie called his manager and said, hey, get me out of here. There's a llama here.
Right.
Well, you're acting like this is normal. Why would you bring a llama?
How can you record a song without a llama? How are you supposed to do that?
A lot of people seem to be able to.
Everyone does that. Who records with a llama?
First of all, are you a pop star?
Well, no.
Have you made many albums?
No.
Then don't tell me what you do to record an album, okay? All the best albums were recorded with a llama.
All your best albums?
All the best albums in music history.
I've never heard of that.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band?
Didn't have a llama.
Llama.
I don't think so.
The Wall? Pink Floyd's The Wall?
Right.
Llama.
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A llama.
Llamas are essential.
Now, when Freddie ran, didn't you say, hey, I'll get rid of the llama, let's finish?
Well, I wanted it to be a trio. I wanted me and Freddie and the llama to perform together. This llama was so talented.
That just sounds crazy.
And he just wanted a duet, and I said, yes, that'd be fine, but what if we add a llama?
Right.
And he said no.
And he gave me sort of a blank look.
That's because he was dialing his manager's phone number in his head, trying to...
I just hope they release my favorite songs, which are the three of us performing together.
You recorded with the llama?
Sure.
How did you get Freddie to even do that?
Here, you want to hear some? I've got some of the work of the three of us working together.
You, Freddie Mercury, and the llama. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. What are the songs called?
Well, we did covers of some Queen songs just to warm up. So this is Another One Bites the Dust.
Another One Bites the Dust.
Another one bites the dust.
Bite the dust, yeah.
Another one bites the dust.
Bite it.
Michael,
bite it. Bite the dust. Bite the dust.
First of all, you're not singing on that.
That was me.
Now you're just going,
No, that was.
Second of all, the llama is a really painful sound.
Oh, that was. He was on key. And
that
everything.
Sounded terrible.
What did you do to him to make like him do that?
Did you grab his junk and hurt it?
No, that was me earlier.
Okay.
How about this song?
All right.
We are a boy, make a big noise. Noise. Hey, you got blood on your face. Big disgrace. We will rock you. We will.
That sounds like llama abuse.
Oh my God, is that animal okay?
That llama got into it.
That llama is painful to listen to.
Oh, I miss that llama. And the next one was even better.
I see a little silhouette of a man. Scarab. Very, very frightening. Here we go.
That does not sound like a duet. It just sounds like you're
sparing his life from this monster.
No, it's still going on.
Yeah.
Wow, so we get to hear that soon, huh?
I don't know. I don't know what the other members of Queen are going to release, but I hope it's the... It's the full llama package.
I hope it is as well.
Hey, the llama's up here.
Hey, that's great news.
Oh, that makes me so much happier. I really hurt my testicles.
Just announced, Kevin and Bean's April Foolishness 2013 is coming up on Saturday, April the 6th, which, as Kevin pointed out, will be here before you know it. That's like a month from 2 days from now. Yeah, it's crazy. Gibson Amphitheater, our friend Jay Moore is on the bill. Bill Burr, Doug Benson, Rob Delaney, Ari Shaffir, Brad Williams. Great, great lineup again this year for great, great charities. All proceeds benefit the Wounded Warrior Project and Cedars-Sinai NICU. Tickets go on sale this Friday at noon.
June if you want to buy those tickets. And, of course, they sell out very, very fast. So we're very excited about the show. All those details, if you missed them, at krock.com.
Adam Lakers Corolla.
That's right.
Adam, let me run that by again. Adam Lakers Corolla. Nope. No.
Ace Man?
I'm saying no.
It's true, right?
Well, it is as far as the government knows. I mean, all you have to do is put something on your driver's license when you're filling out the form about 25 years ago, and it just becomes fact.
Okay, what's the story here? So you, and by the way, I didn't know about this about Adam until somebody tweeted the other day that he was courtside at a Lakers game, and it mentioned that his middle name was really Lakers, and I thought, what? But you weren't born with that name. What's the story, Ace?
Well, originally it was the Wizards. And my dad thought that was a little lofty.
What was your middle name on your birth certificate the day you were born?
No middle name, because my parents, I swear to you, I know it sounds like I'm making a big deal about this, but I think the bloom was off the rose before I left the hospital with my parents.
Like, yeah.
No middle name is just a, you know, it's one of those things. Like, first off, I can't stand it because every kid has seven middle names now.
Yeah, true. Totally.
Little Dakota, Montana, New Jersey, Phantasm, you know, and Jackson. You know, it's like it's way too much because it's just, I mean, look, their parents are a-holes and they're narcissists, but they're trying as hard as they can.
Your parents weren't trying, or?
Well,
had they given up on
you? It's the worst conversation I ever had as an adult with my parents, because it bothered me my whole life that everyone else had a middle name. And you'd get that thing where, well, I'm named after my grandfather who was a war hero or something like that, whatever the middle name is. It's an excuse to pay homage to somebody else in the family or
to go
with something a little nutty.
Totally.
I said as an adult just a few years ago, I said to my dad, Dad, what's up with the middle name thing? Why no middle name? And he gave me the worst answer a father could give to a son. He went, yeah, I don't know. And then he said, you should ask your mom. Maybe she knows. And then I said, all right, I'll ask my mom. And then I said to my mom, why no middle name? She paused. She goes, did you ask your dad?
Neither of them even care about it now.
They didn't have a story. There was no story other than, I don't know, we ran out of time. We ran out
That's
of age.
Crazy. You know? We decided it would be unique to not have a middle name. Anything.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have some story fashion.
You could lie about it.
Easily. So
right.
I got tired of this, and I was about, I must have been about 19, maybe I was 20, 21, I can't remember, but I was getting my license renewed, and I was sitting in the, I was probably like 23, and I was sitting in the DMV, and you know, my whole life, by the way, you don't give your kid a middle name, they have to stare at that empty box between their first name and their last name for every single official thing you fill out,
sure,
right?
Sure, it bothers you for life.
Space for a middle name, and it just taunts you. It taunts you. Oh, look, your parents don't care about you. We got nothing. That guy to the right, he's still writing in his middle name. No, so I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm writing in a middle name. And the Lakers were, you know, they were in deep in the playoff. They were in the championship with the Celtics.
Right.
And I just thought, they were on my mind. I was rooting for them. It was the Magic, you know, Larry Bird era. And I just wrote Lakers. And once I wrote Lakers in, that's all it took.
Really?
On every, you know, on my deed to my house, my driver's license, everything I own now, insurance papers, everything says Lakers.
So is it in fact now your legal name?
Well, it is practically my legal name because it's on every single document I own. No one ever checks. You know, everyone always talks about the bad side of the DMV, where everyone's so lazy and lethargic and no one has any follow through. The good news is they don't check your middle name. I mean, there's a happy side to lazy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? This is it. You write in whatever you want.
Interesting.
It's a good thing you weren't watching porn when you decided to give yourself a middle name.
Yeah. I mean, it could have, like I said, It could have been a lot worse. It could have, you know, it could have been the Rams. It could have been, you know, it could have been the Rams, and then they would have left town. You know what I mean?
That's right. So are you happy about it today? Are you still enough of a Lakers fan that you're happy to have that as your name?
It was the first Lakers game I've been to. I told O'Reilly and whoever else would listen.
Yeah, Adam was there with Bill O'Reilly courtside, by the way, in case you're wondering. Not a joke.
It was the last Lakers game I went to since I went with Jimmy and Kevin.
Wow. Wow.
And I was very proud of myself that Lakers game. I don't know if you remember back in 95, 94, 95, Kevin.
Not a bit.
We went to, I said, oh, we were in the Staples Center. I said, we must have sat way up there. And I pointed, I said, oh, no, wait a minute. We were at the Forum. When we went, there was no.
Wow.
The Staples Center wasn't there when
it
we went.
It wouldn't have been there. Not
me
then, no.
Me and Jimmy drove to the Forum, and I was very proud that I walked in line to go get a beer, and when I was walking back, one of the chicks fired a T-shirt from the T-shirt cannon. And without spilling the beer, I jumped up and one-handed it, snagged it out of the air in, like, the third row, and I gave it to you, Kevin, as a little something for taking me to Lakers game, and I know that shirt is displayed somewhere proudly in your home.
It was maybe the proudest moment that I've ever had that day.
So the point is, though, now you're a big-time star sitting courtside with Bill O'Reilly, and your name is actually Adam Lakers Carolla. That's where we ended up here.
That's where we ended up, and it's funny, but it's true, and like I said, it's not my middle name, but if it's on every single document, I'm sure my death certificate will contain it as well.
Well, what they do is they go back to any earlier document and they check that one. So if that one says Lakers, you have to
pull your license out. That's it.
Yep, exactly. All right, Ace, you're the best, man. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
See you, Lakers.
So that's a crazy story, right?
Yeah.
How many people get to create their own middle name?
I didn't know that was possible.
I didn't either. That sounds like a one-of-a-kind story. So we got to talking about exactly what Adam said, which is usually people use the middle name as a parking space for either a weird family name that is too crazy to give you as a first name, or as some sort of a tribute to something that they're into, like Nintendo or something like that. So we want to hear from you if you've got a bizarre middle name. I don't know how this is going to go, but I have a feeling there have to be a bunch of people out there who have had that middle spot on their name kind of used as a dumping ground, right?
I would imagine. And how excited will they be to hear that they can just change that?
Yeah, right, exactly. All you have to do is go renew your driver's license, right?
Write it in. So, you got it set.
1-800-520-1067 is the toll-free number. 1-800-520-1067. For instance, we've already heard from Rochelle, whose middle name is Starr, S-T-A-R-R. And I can only guess that that's because her parents were Beatles fans. I'm a Ringo Starr fan. Star, I'm not going to name you Starr or Ringo, but that's my tribute to the Beatles, is making your middle name Starr. So that's exactly what we're talking about. 1-800-520-1067. Your call is coming up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. Our friend the Nerdist, Chris Hardwick, host of Talking Dead on AMC, will be talking about The Walking Dead coming up in about 10 minutes or so right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, we're talking about crazy middle names. It's a dumping ground your parents use sometimes to reflect their own hobbies or interests or sometimes family members. Oh, my God, we're getting some great ones. Augustine really writes in. His kid's name is, middle name is Jedi.
Jedi?
Here's Eric. My friend just had a baby boy a few months ago, gave him the middle name Rev after the drummer of Avenged Sevenfold, Jimmy the Rev Sullivan. I thought it was a little odd naming your son after someone who just died of an overdose, if you ask me. But his middle name for the rest of his life, he's got to explain, well, it was the nickname of this guy who was in this band.
He's making up another story. You know that.
Yeah.
Rev is his middle name. So we're taking your calls, too, at 1-800-520-1067. Let's talk to Kate first on line one. I thought this was just a joke. If Kate really did this, I need to have a word with her.
Hey, Kate.
My son's middle name is Danger.
Oh, Danger.
Your son's middle name?
You named a friend.
Yes. My husband, it started off as a joke. Sorry. He said he always wanted to use it. And after tossing it around, we decided to go with it.
So you're hoping that his big pickup line for the ladies when he gets old enough is Danger is my middle name.
Correct. You know, we figure, you know, if he doesn't live up to it now, he'll use it later to pull some chicks at the bar.
I always thought
her son pulling chicks at the bar.
I can't wait for my son to get laid. I always thought that that was just a joke that people made, but you really did give your kid Danger as a middle name.
Really did. Social Security, birth certificate, everything.
You are bad parents.
Shame on you.
All right. Kate, thank you. Let's go to Robert. He's on line two, and I'm guessing some sort of a sci-fi geek. Hi, Robert.
What's going on?
Hey.
What's your... I was named, my middle name is Tiberius, and I was named after James Tiberius Kirk, captain of the USS Enterprise.
How about that?
You sound proud of it, Robert.
I've asked about it. Well, I'm more of a Star Wars fan, so that's why I'm sad about it, I guess. But Tiberius is a pretty cool name.
I think it's kind of cool.
When I asked my parents, my mom, I guess, lost a bet, and it was she got to choose between Tiberius or Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, so, of the two, you're doing
Tiberius
better.
Tiberius is better than the alternative.
That's amazing. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that, Robert Tiberius. Let's go to William. William is on line seven. You know, not all of the names are just wacky. Some of them are just confusing. William, welcome to the show.
Hello, William. I can't. Hello?
Hello, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry. What's going on, dude?
Not too much, man. My name's pretty crazy. I grew up with a long Hawaiian name, 36 letters long my entire life. Ku'u aloha, okamalu vilo, ona vai, hanupa nupa.
Wait a minute. That's your whole name or that's your middle name?
That's just my Hawaiian name.
Just your Hawaiian name?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm confused, but your real name is William, so you don't have to use all that Hawaiian nonsense, right?
Correct. I go by William. The only legal document that that middle name is on is my birth certificate. The DMV, when I was 16, actually said it was too long to put on my license, so they shortened it for me.
Nice.
Wow. Let me hear just the middle name again that you were given as a baby.
Okay, it's Ku'u aloha, okamalu vilo, ona vai, hanupa nupa.
Well, aloha to you. Thank you for the call. We appreciate that.
That's a great name.
Here's the opposite of this, by the way, from a Kevin Bean listener who says, I gave my son the middle name J, just the letter J, after the great Homer Simpson. Bean, you're with me, right? How about
that?
How's that for the shortest of all possible middle names, right?
Why
it stands for nothing.
Why do parents think that's a good idea?
Is it such a bad name if your middle name is just J?
Well,
it doesn't seem too bad to me. Let's try Jeff. He's on line one here on the Kevin Bean Show. 1-800-520-1067. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, party people.
Your middle name?
Maximus.
Maximus. There you go.
But my last name is Johnson. No joke.
Maximus Johnson.
That's nice. Also your porn name.
My dad actually thought it would be pretty funny.
Really? He thought of that way back when. No, my joke. Son's going to have a go-to joke in his name.
Absolutely.
And the thing that surprises me is I would imagine there are a lot of Maximuses out there, but it's people who were born after the Gladiator movie was so popular. But that can't be you, right?
No, I'm in my 40s.
Yeah, you were way before then. That's interesting.
Way
all right.
Before.
Maximus Johnson. Sweet.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Let's try, we only have time for a couple more. Let's go to Tammy. Tammy's on line three. Crazy middle names. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
Your brother's middle name is what?
Easter, as in the holiday.
Your brother's middle name is Easter.
Easter.
What's that about?
My great-grandfather was born on Easter, and when McKinley was president, so his name was Easter McKinley. So my dad decided to name him after his grandfather, and so his name is David Easter.
How about that?
Is that crazy?
What's your middle name, Tammy?
Renee.
Renee, so they gave you a regular one.
Right. So he just goes by David E.
Oh, that's funny.
He doesn't even write it out, or he doesn't even say Easter's his middle name.
Yeah, he just prefers to pretend that it didn't happen. Exactly. All right, thank you for the call. Let's do one more. Let's do Autumn. I think she's got a crazy one like our Hawaiian friend. Hi, Autumn, on line five. Welcome to the Kevin Bean Show. What's going on?
My middle name is Dawn Megan Mariah Bridget Colleen Cashin.
Are you the next Queen of England? What's going on?
What?
You know, it's funny because I asked my mom a while back why I had so many middle names, and she's like, well, you know, we're royalty in my eyes, so I just wanted to give you so many. And
what?
Every
one
of them.
We're royalty in my eyes?
She's a little eccentric.
It sounds like it. I mean, either that or they just couldn't decide. They had so many names that were on the short list, and they just decided to use them all up. But that's crazy. So do you have one that you use when you're filling out paperwork, like at the doctor or something?
Well, yeah, kind of like that one guy who was on earlier. I tried to put all of them on, and the DMV said I couldn't use all of them. So I just shortened it to Autumn Dawn Mariah Cashin. But even still, it's pretty darn long.
Yeah, that's a lot of names. All right, and thank you for the call, Autumn Dawn Mariah Cashin. We appreciate it.